yesterday afternoon, I want you to picture this. Yesterday afternoon, it's about 5 o'clock, and I'm doing dishes. And the doorbell rings, and I didn't turn on my light.
It's over.
How's that? Is that better? Okay, so where was I? It's yesterday, it's 5 o'clock, I'm doing dishes, wearing my apron, and the doorbell rang. And I went to the door, and there standing on my porch were several members of our congregation's Peace and Justice Steering Committee, plus a beautiful little dog that one of them brought. And they looked at me and said, "You know that nationally famous, powerful speaker who's supposed to come preach about peacemaking tomorrow? He's not coming." And so it is that I found out, with suds on my hands, at 5 o'clock yesterday in the afternoon, that I was going to preach a sermon this morning. Which, you know, actually is kind of a dream come true. Because, you know, I preached my first sermon when I was 13 years old. And ever since preaching my first sermon at age 13, I have been troubled with anxiety dreams about arriving in a pulpit with nothing to say. So yes, this is a dream come true. It's an anxiety dream come true. Actually, I have avoided the complete realization of my dreams by not finishing the dishes, which is always fun to do anyway, and then by sitting down and banging out a sermon on the second chapter of Isaiah. But still, in 37 years or so since my first sermon, I doubt I've ever written a sermon as late as this sermon was written. Today's sermon is what the sermon writing community calls a Saturday night special. Now, I know that there are pastors who don't like to prepare. Pastors who think that the Spirit of God is only ever truly present when you're in the pulpit flying by the seat of your pants. But my dreams will allow no such movement of the Spirit. So here I am, like it's a regular Sunday, preaching from a manuscript. The only thing I'm glad of is that this sermon is one in which I'm preaching on the second chapter of Isaiah and on the subject of beating swords into plowshares and spears into pruning hooks, because this is a passage I've loved for a long time. It's a passage that I have considered and mulled over more than most other passages in the Bible. And here's the thing. I used to find comfort in this passage. I really liked the idea of folks taking their instruments of death and then turning them into agricultural implements. I've heard somewhere about folks who melt down guns and use the metal to create shovels. And I've had fantasies about converting tanks into tractors and of planting community gardens on the flight decks of decommissioned and dry dock aircraft carriers. And I certainly hope to see such conversions come to pass in the fullness of time. But more recently, I have come to believe that it is the human heart that is the primary weapon that needs conversion. I've come to believe that, particularly in the United States, our hearts have been weaponized such that we are conditioned to reverence and to pay our highest honor to the military and to people serving in the military. And unless we change the condition of our hearts, unless we beat that sword into a plowshare, peace will be impossible. And to be completely transparent with you, that is something that I'm afraid to talk about, even from the pulpit of Montclair Presbyterian Church. I'm afraid to talk about how we need to stop fetishizing the military. You see, we live in the United States, And we, the people, have a serious military fetish problem. And it even affects us here at Montclair Presbyterian Church. And when I say this, if I say that even here at Montclair Presbyterian Church, we have a problem, I am speaking from experience. 1 year, December 7th, fell on a Sunday. And during the closing hymn that Sunday, a much beloved and now deceased member of the congregation came up and dressed me down, read me the riot act, because I hadn't mentioned Pearl Harbor in my sermon. It's a problem even here. A few years ago, I wrote a book about Islam. And it was a book that the reviewers were kind enough to like and to say good things about in print. And so for a brief time, I got to feel like an expert on Islam. And people would ask me questions about Islam, and they would actually listen when I answered them. It was kind of fun. I liked those days. I liked teaching about Islam. And one time, a retired State Department official of some standing came to meet with me. He'd been involved in trying to run Iraq after the 2003 invasion, and he wanted to pick my brain about how we could teach Muslims in Iraq to set aside violence. I know that this violence isn't representative of most Islam, he told me. But these guys, they really glorify violence. And they fetishize their militants. Now, in my work around Islam, I've always tried to address the issue of Muslim violence by following Jesus' suggestion that we consider the log in our own eye before addressing the speck in our neighbor's eye. And so I used that same approach, and I said, well, maybe we should lead by example, and we should stop glorifying our own military and stop fetishizing our own service members. And I confess to you, somewhat sheepishly, that I was proud of that answer. I felt as if I had, in that conversation, I had come up with a secret sauce for peace. I was starting to rehearse my Nobel speech. You know, if we just give up violence, then maybe they will, if we do more to give up violence, maybe they'll do more to give up violence, and before too long, there won't be any us or them, there'll just be a we. I was about to go find my ukulele so that there in the office, we could start singing Kumbaya together. But that's not what happened. In fact, that was the end of the conversation, pretty much. What this guy said to me in response to my suggestion was that the military is the most trusted institution in the United States, and no governmental policy could have even the hint of disrespect for the military or for those serving in uniform. And he's right, of course. No policy of any kind could ever involve asking Americans to stop glorifying the military, because no one wants to seem even the slightest bit disrespectful to the military. Recently, I read an article by a Mennonite. And she was saying that the Mennonites, even the Mennonites, are starting to move away from being anti-military, in favor of being more just sort of generally pro-peace or anti-violence. But they're starting to move away from the traditional anti-militarism, which has distinguished Mennonites and other Anabaptist groups for centuries. Now, when I was in seminary, I used to chafe against what we used to call political correctness, right? Meaning that we were always tripping over our linguistic choices in an effort to make sure we never offended anyone. Well, the political correctness around how we talk about the military trumps anything I ever saw in seminary. But look what happened to Colin Kaepernick. Colin Kaepernick took a knee during the national anthem to protest police brutality, but folks spun it to make it seem as if he was disrespecting the military, and he lost his career, right? And speaking for myself, personally, I am probably too quick to say things that might offend. In seminary, I used to speak of the fatherhood of God and the brotherhood of man just to assert my right to be in control of the words I speak. I'm a progressive who has called out misbehavior by unions. In fact, one time in San Jose, I had a labor council employee come into my office and yell at me and try to intimidate me into taking back my public and entirely accurate observation that the unions were running racist political ads in my neighborhood. I have been publicly dressed down because of my support for Palestinian rights. I have had people leave my congregations because of my support for the idea that a pastor should be able to stand in the pulpit wearing the colors of pride. Which is to say, I usually don't hold back. Even when holding back would be a better idea. But I am afraid to say anything that would make anyone think I'm disrespecting the military. And it's not just me. Since we became a peace church here at Montclair Presbyterian Church, I have been interviewed a few times, and I've written some things, and I've helped friends get stuff published all around being pacifists as Presbyterians. And at every step, every time I or anyone else speaks of our pacifism, someone will say, yes, but you do respect the military, right? You do want to honor the service of those who wear the uniform, right? And of course the answer is yes. But here's what I don't want to do. I don't want to fetishize the military. I certainly don't want to glorify violence as a way of avoiding the appearance of disrespect. What I want to do is I want to understand that respect isn't the same as glorifying. That respect is not the same as fetishizing. What I also want to do is I also want to honor all the service to our country, not just that service that perpetuates violence. Because I think honoring all kinds of service to our country and to our communities, it might be a way to start changing our hearts. It might be a way to start beating our spears into pruning hooks, such that our weaponized hearts become instruments of peace. I am one of five siblings. And while we have grandparents who served in World War I, no one in our family has served in the military since my stepdad's father got out of the Navy in the 1930s. But I do believe my family serves its country in other ways, ways that are just as commendable. So for example, my older brother is a paramedic, and for time he was a volunteer firefighter. He has saved countless lives up along the North Coast in those capacities as a volunteer firefighter and as a paramedic. My younger brother designs robotic devices that are used to streamline the work of medical laboratories. My younger brother's devices have helped to create a quicker turnaround for diagnosis of several kinds of cervical and uterine cancers, thereby saving the lives of untold numbers of women. One of my sisters spent several years working in a public school in San Jose's inner city, teaching underprivileged children, many of them undocumented, how to read and write and do math and to learn, to love learning. My other sister is a folk musician whose contributions to the cultural life of her community have been invaluable and whose songs have touched the lives of people across the country. She is a folk musician, which means that even though one of her albums was on the charts, she still works as a vet tech, helping to preserve the health of people's pets and working animals. But we don't, in our country, we don't honor the kinds of service that my siblings render to their country. We may say that we do, but follow the money. Since 2001, our country has spent $6 trillion on warfare. That's roughly $39 million an hour, or if you'd rather, it's considerably more than $10,000 every second. But we pay paramedics minimum wage for the most part. And we never seem to have enough money to make sure that every woman has equal access to the kind of medical care that my younger brother's mechanized devices provide. We don't pay our teachers enough money to raise a family, and we don't fund arts education so that the next generation of cultural innovators have the potential to be the best possible artists. But there is always enough money to build and to detonate bombs. Now, I happen to believe that my siblings have rendered invaluable service to their country. asking anyone to disrespect the military. What I am saying is that we should be not afraid to render equal recognition for the patriotic contributions of teachers and firefighters and social workers and pediatricians and artists and innovators and public interest lawyers and dancers and coaches and journalists and the guy down at the hardware store who helps you find just the right size tool for a project you're working on and then smiles at you and bids you to have a nice day even when his day isn't going so well. Because that is service to our country. Notice, I have said nothing disrespectful of anyone who serves in the military or who has served in the military in this sermon. What I am saying is that we should not disrespect other kinds of service and that we should appreciate everyone's contributions. But the fact that so many Americans would hear disrespect in my call for celebrating all kinds of service, that, dearly beloved, means we have a problem. If we do not set aside our nation's idolatry of the military, we will never have peace. If we do not beat our swords into plowshares, we cannot expect other people to beat their spears into pruning hooks. If we don't celebrate the service of those who make nonviolent contributions to our society, how can we expect folks in other countries to stop glorifying militants who fight on their behalf? Let us beat our swords into plowshares. I ask you not to disrespect anyone for the service they have rendered, however they saw fit to render that service. What I do ask is this: honor those who serve peacefully at least as much as you honor those who serve militarily. Thank your mechanic for her service to the community. And if you're flying first class, give your seat to someone who organizes youth sports at the YMCA or who volunteers at a local food bank. In fact, here's what I'd like our congregation to do. This is a challenge that I'm going to set down for us. I'd like for the session, and for those of you who are not Presbyterians, the session is kind of like a spiritualized board of directors. I'd like for the session to write a letter to the Oakland A's and to the Raiders if they're still in Oakland next season. And I'd like us to ask these two local sport teams. You know what? Maybe the Golden State Warriors too, although I understand they're leaving us for some other city across the bay. But I'd like us to write our local sports teams. And I'd like us to ask our local sport teams to forego for one game this season, one game, I'd like us to write and ask the sports teams to forego a military color guard and any mention of the military, and instead to invite a group of second and third grade teachers from schools near the Coliseum to march in, bearing the flags of our country and our state. And I'd like to invite the gathered crowd of sports fans, all spangled and green and yellow or gray and black, to stand up and to honor the service of our teachers. Yes. Because that's what it looks like to change our society's values. This is what it looks like to hammer the swords of our hearts into plowshares. For us anyway, I believe it is a matter of the human heart.